My name is Deandra Poe, and I am the founder of Glass Soldier, a duty-bound and data-driven nonprofit dedicated to the elimination of sexual assault in the U.S. Armed Forces. In this podcast, we will explore the pervasive culture of military sexual trauma and how we, as a collective, can change it. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Duty Bound. My name is Deandra Poe, your host. That sounds weird. I was trying something new. I'm going to leave it alone. Anyway, thank you for joining me today on our next episode, episode 6. And for those of you taking notes, as I always say, this is about command and control. So we're going to talk about control a little bit, not just, you know, Army aspect, command and control. Obviously, that has a lot to do with it, but also about control when it comes to sexual assault and a little storytelling. So that's always how I want to be able to draw people in and also for people to better understand. Storytelling is extremely important. Storytelling has been something that I've been learning a lot about as I am growing as a speaker, as I'm growing as an activist, an advocate, a thought leader. Storytelling helps paint the picture. So if you've been listening to all of my episodes, which I hope you have, and I hope you've been like giving me reviews, let me know your honest feedback. I cannot improve if I don't have feedback. So I always welcome feedback. Failure is welcome here because I want to be better. I want to be able to reach across every aisle and every aspect and be able to hear opinions regardless of how anyone feels. Your feelings are validated. That's how you feel. Far be it me to tell someone how they feel. And the same goes for myself. No one else can tell me how I feel about something. It is up to me to determine what to do with those feelings. So either way, command and control, let's get into it. I don't take my audience as unintelligent people. It's a word. I take every single person on here to be intelligent. So please humor me a little bit as I go into the definitions of both words, command and control. I think most people have the general idea of what command and control mean. Command meaning give orders, dominate from a superior height. I found that very interesting, dominate from a superior height. I'm a very short person, so very few people that can, that I can dominate with my superior height. With that being said, my command presence has to come from a different place. To instruct, direct. You see where I'm going with this. That's the word command. Control means the power to influence people's behavior, to sway, have authority, to reduce the incidence or severity of especially innocuous levels or behaviors. I found that word interesting, innocuous, because it means not likely to give offense or hostility. So to control, to reduce the incidence or the severity of offense or hostility means control. So story time. Well, not so much a story as I want to talk about the repetitive nature, the conversation around bills, policies, asking for changes when it comes to reporting and ways service members can report sexual assault or simply just changes to the UCMJ to allow for more transparency and what a lot of people call control. There seems to be this continuous conversation about control. taking control away from the commanders. So if any of my audience is familiar, Senator Gillibrand proposed 2016, I believe, and I hate that I used the word I believe instead of having that information readily available, but Senator Gillibrand proposed the Military Justice Improvement Act, which mainly focuses on the prosecution of sexual assaults and how they're handled. And a lot of the myths and a lot of the opposition that came up against this bill was about control. So one of them, and she did a great job of dispelling those myths with data. That is what duty bound is. That is what Glass Soldier is. We are data driven, meaning what does the data tell us? Now, I say that and realize that in a previous episode, and for people that are researchers, they understand that data can be skewed, that there's bias in collection. Our bias comes across in the things that we want to study. And I think someone famous once said to study something is to change it, which is why people don't like going and messing with Native people that have never interacted with Western culture, so forth and so on, animals, to study them without changing their environment or interfering. I can go down rabbit holes. Sorry. Either way, let's go back to Senator Gillibrand and the statistical data. So on her website, she has, you know, these the list of myths and facts. And one of them is it will take control away from commanders. So what it said in there was that prosecutions will drop because commanders can push a case forward if a lawyer doesn't want to. So that's the myth, that if commanders don't have control or, you know, to push case forward that they feel definitely should go to trial, then the conviction rates are going to drop. Well, in fact, conviction rates are less than 3% of all cases that go forward to trial right now. So I fail to see, and anyone else can, again, come up against me with statistical data to show how this will lend to cases that aren't going forward right now. Conviction rates are horrendous. The amount of cases that actually go to trial are horrendous. Even with proof and evidence. And there are many, many factors to this. Don't get me wrong. This is not just commanders are not pushing forward the cases. There are things that come that are taken into consideration going forward. I've had conversations with attorneys. I've had conversations with commanders on the other end and as to why cases plead down or soldiers get out, so forth and so on. I understand that there are many factors, but most of them don't lead to justice. The other one was it lets commanders off the hook. Not exactly sure who said that or how that would lead to commanders being off the hook. From what point? If anything, it allows commanders to exercise those words, command and control, and better set a new climate. So I go back to that word control again, because control means the power to influence people's behavior. Commanders set the tone of the environment. They set the climate for the environment. And that should be every commander, from the company commander all the way up to the division commander. And dare I say it, all the way up to Joint Chiefs, all the way up to whatever star you have, whatever your rank are, if you are a leader, enlisted or not, you have control of the environment. If a first sergeant and a commander don't get along, you're going to know, and that unit is going to suffer. the goal is for first sergeant to guide the commander. Commander is supposed to control. Command and control. Set the tone for the environment. Set the tone for the enlisted to be able to do their jobs. So, here we go with that word control again. So let's talk about control as it relates to sexual assault, since this is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Control, statistically, most sexual assaults are perpetrated by men, at least statistically, that we've found out. It's not to say that men, women do not assault men. We know that to be true. But what happens is there's this power dynamic where the perpetrator occupies more of a dominant position in relation to the victim. This power dynamic is usually someone who has the ability to say what that person can and can't do, how far that person can and can't go, which is why we often see the victims of sexual assault when it comes to service members. The perpetrator is usually someone that outranks them. So research cannot necessarily pinpoint to, you know, why perpetrators rape or assault, harass or stalk people. You know, they've gotten it down to a few things: lack of empathy, hostility towards that a particular group or gender. Gender-based violence is a thing. Narcissism and toxic masculinity. All of those go back to control. Control over the person. So again, I want to point to the fact that there's a power dynamic between the person and the perpetrator and the victim. And the reason why I want to go back to that is because it's story time again. It's not story time. It's army times, or probably in the news. If anyone has paid attention this week, there was a report that came out from Fort Sill. And I don't believe they were all at Fort Sill, but in the army times, they published that 18 instructors were charged with sexual assault. What made this article really interesting, because on the surface, a lot of people would be like drill sergeants, assaulting trainees, you know, close case, like open and shut. But what was interesting was that what they were being charged with was something fairly new, new articles under the UCMJ, which basically, Article 93A, and I think it's 92, yes. So these articles, these new articles, fairly recent articles, pinned to vulnerable populations, which they consider trainees vulnerable. Not just trainees, they also to include, and I believe, trainees, people that are in, have not, you know, yet committed to the military. So I'm looking specifically for those words. Applicants, delayed entry program members, service members still undergoing their initial training. Those are considered specially protected junior members of the armed forces. So this Article 93A under the UCMJ criminalizes sexual relationships between these two. So not just, you know, sexual assault, but also relationships. Because I can understand how, you know, some might use consent as a form to develop a relationship with a trainee. But what was so interesting to me, and the words that stuck out to me was an official came forward and said that the Army views trainees as incapable of consent due to their instructor's imbalance of power. There goes power control again. Their imbalance of power. I remember while I was still at Bullock, an incident occurred with some of the instructors there and a junior officer. I didn't know the instructors, didn't know the lieutenant. I don't even think they were part of my class. But I remember the senior ranking officer, female, came in and she made an announcement because there was rumors going around about what was going on. And this wasn't an assault, but more of a relationship that was developing between these two adults, seemingly adults. Either way, she made it very, very clear that she was not going to tolerate it. If anyone is caught talking about it, or she finds out you were involved, like heads will roll. She had this whole, you know, Queen of Hearts mentality about the situation. I think that was almost like my very first introduction to her. And I've had a later interaction with her. Either way, heads would roll. And the way that she brought everybody in to this whole situation was to control the rumors. So I admired that part about her, that she wanted to take command and control of the situation to, one, stop the rumors, and to, two, let everyone know where she stood in this situation. Like, not in my house. This is not going to happen. I admired her for that. This is while I'm still in training, before my assault happened. So, you know, I see this woman taking on this role as a leader, and pretty much like, if you mess with me, this will be the last time you wear this uniform. I admired that about her. So the 18 from this article, mind you, 18 people from 2019 to 2021, it took them 2 years to complete an investigation to find out that instructors were probably having unauthorized relationships with trainees or assaulting them. A couple of them came forward. Just amazes me and irritates me to no end. What's the word I'm looking for? The peanut butter train of investigations that happens. Again, I don't think it's surprising to anyone that it takes this long. In the civilian world, would it take longer? Probably. I can't speak about civilian justice. I've never had to seek civilian justice. Perhaps some of my listeners or anyone else who's had to go through the civilian justice side to seek retribution for being assaulted or raped could speak to that. I can't. I know as a victim, it can seem like forever. And for 2 years, meaning these trainees, these junior soldiers went through training, then went on to move to their assignment, knowing that this had happened to them. And if it was unwanted, if it was shameful, they carried it with them. I understand that. I definitely can relate to carrying the shame going from one place to another, especially at the very beginning. Ink not even dry on your orders, if you even signed on your orders yet. We're talking about people that they said hadn't even committed yet. Delayed entry. What does that do to a person whose desire is to come into the military and are trying to get themselves together, high school, determine what they're going to do with their life, And then in comes this instructor dominating you, inserting their power over you. Yeah. So from what was published, 4 were charged at Fort Sill. No convictions. 1 pled to disobeying a direct order. Having a relationship with a trainee is a direct order. Where does that leave that person? You plead out, you disobeyed a direct order. Where do you go from there? What does growth look like to a leader who would do something like that? I know this probably seems like I'm just like, rehabilitation for people that have done wrong. That's not true. I believe that people are capable of change. Some people are. I will caveat it with some people are capable of change. And there are a lot of amazing people that have done some really messed up stuff in their lives and have gone on to be phenomenal people. Everyone messed up. I am not without stain. I take blame for some of the mistakes that I made in my career, especially with having to walk around with this. Not getting the help, knowing that I was spiraling, so forth and so on. Many, many things. But in the United States Army, when you raise your hand and you swear an oath, and you are supposed to be held accountable by the core values, and every branch has their different values. I can only speak to the Army because I'm Army, huh? So the Air Force has their own core values. The Marine Corps has their own core values. Air Force, the Coast Guard, Navy, everyone has core values. And I'm sure they all align with the same thing. Integrity, honesty, trustworthiness, somewhere along those lines where you now have to be trusted. Trusted that you're not going to destroy someone's life because you cannot empathize, because you're hostile or narcissistic. Anyway, I fail to see how the rehabilitation part, if a service member is found guilty or whatever words they use for the UCMJ, because I know sometimes it's not a guilt or not guilty type of thing. I remember going through my trial that was like one of the things they told me was not guilty, or they weren't using that language. Again, forgive me, JAG lawyers out there. Somebody can correct me. Either way, if someone is convicted, found guilty, found to have done the things that they were accused of doing and are allowed to stay in, what does rehabilitation look like? Because in the civilian side, when someone is found guilty, they go to prison. And in prison, they usually, before parole or anything else, especially for heinous crimes, they're asked about if they're sorry for their crimes. They're want to apologize, if they're rehabilitated, if what are the odds of them doing it again? And you keep soldiers, service members in with the ability to do it again. And you give them access to someone's life, to other people's lives. Because at the end of the day, whether they deploy or not deploy, you have to know that that person standing to your right or left is going to have your back, to include not raping me or assaulting me or exerting your power over me simply because you can. I don't think that the power struggle is always between men and women. It can be women against women as well. I didn't have nearly as many problems when I came forward from my male supervisors as I did from female. So let me tell you why. And I'm going to kind of end it with this. I'm not exactly sure again, struggling with my words here a little bit. I'm not exactly sure what it was that set my female leaders off. The fact that I was brave enough to tell my story, or the fact that I wanted to fight staying in. Three female leaders. At least with the two male leaders that I had an issue with, did it behind my back to other men. And then I had to go sit in front of a higher ranking officer, literally biting my tongue so I could taste the salty blood in my mouth because I knew they were wrong. And some of the people that have come forward in the last, you know, year or so speaking out, I've seen videos. I almost wish I was that brave to just call them out, but I didn't. But with my female leaders, they were bold. Not only did they do it in front of people, but it was almost as if they dared me. Dare you to say something to me. As if no one would question another female retaliating against a victim for telling her truth. And it was about power. It was about power with them because they outranked me. And if you knew my story, you know I didn't go until I was in my 30s. So for some of them, the immediate relationship was, you're older, I can give you a little bit more respect than I would, you know, another junior officer of the same rank because you've got life experience. But as they started to piece things out and figure things out and, you know, rumors started to happen, things started to go around, they started to make their own opinions about what was going on rather than come to me, that's when the dynamic shifted. And I couldn't understand the visceral behind the things that were going on. Threatening to fight me, writing me up, literally counseling me. And in front of male supervisors, it was completely different. But given an opportunity to be alone with them, it was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It can leave someone who's already felt like they had their power taken from them when someone violated them. But to be in the presence of women, mind you, I admired this one leader for her ability to be like, not while I'm here, not while I'm in charge. To see her go from that to the complete opposite floored me. Literally felt like someone pulled the rug from underneath of my feet. But she was a different rank then and in a different position. And the higher she got up, the more she felt like a crab to me. not a transformational leader at all, but more like the ones that we constantly hear about. I'm going to be the first to tell you, I never had a female mentor while I was in. And that was a reason why. I didn't have a male mentor in either. I had a good male mentor, though, outside of my unit, outside of the state, period. Someone I knew before I even went in who was in the military, who I credit today for saving my life through this whole situation. And I would give him a shout out, but I didn't get permission first. But I think he knows who he is. He saved my life. Because he gave it to me straight. And I think if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't have made it 7 years, especially statistically knowing that most people leave within months of coming forward. And the truth of the matter is, once my story was out there, like once I really began to advocate for myself and fight, I was gone within months. Because the harder I pushed, the harder the system pushed back against me. But as long as I was compliant and willing to go along with the narrative, but I was just coasting through a shell of a leader, not developing at all. So another leader, and I'm going to end it here, another leader of mine and a developing mentor gave me a book to read called Athena Rising. It's geared towards male mentors, but it's so powerful for women to read and to understand because now you know what to look for and how this relates to that command and control is it really opens your eyes to what a good leader looks like without the relationship being sexualized and all the other aspects that come along with women in the military. Junior soldiers in the military, men in the military, female leaders as well can mentor male soldiers, service members. So until next time, I appreciate you all for tuning in, for listening, for sharing, for supporting. So don't forget to go over to glasssoldier.org, see what we're up to. Amazing things. We're doing this. And I'm going to be the one. Posted it all. Posted something this week that said, I'm not the one. And at the same time, I'll be that one. So if you don't know, now you know.